I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Desert Isolation Discs, the show in which I cheekily chat to people who absolutely love music. Ladies and gentlemen, you are in for a treat today. Imagine you're going down to the pub with someone who always makes you chuckle and they like great music. Now imagine that person is MJ Hibbert and you get to hear that music as you chat. Great, eh? He's a giant of the British indie pop world. Together with his band The Validators, he's been gigging for years. He actually created his first band on the way back from a school art trip to London. And his list of accolades include releasing the first ever internet single, getting loads of recognition on the likes of the BBC and Rolling Stone, and most importantly, single-handedly creating lively crowds from Portsmouth to Peterhead. He's even created his own dance, The Indie Kid. I've shuffled it many times. It's great. He's fiercely independent. He releases everything he does on his own cheeky imprint, Artists Against Success. He's got a fantastic new album out. I urge you to listen to it. It's called Still Valid. We chat about that, the recording process, gigging, football, his beloved Peterborough United, and how he turns a room of people who don't like him into a room of people who love him. It's great. I won't stop you from listening to it now. Let's have a listen.
So, Mark, welcome to Desert Isolation Disc.
Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. We're in a pub in the city in London, quite upstairs of a pub, beautiful carpet.
Yeah, proper.
The perfect place to start discussing music. So how did you compile your list for me?
Well, what happened was I had several showers and a couple of baths and thought about it and then thought about it a lot. And then when I came out, I sat down with my missus and I said to her, you know, I'm going to tell you my list, see if there's anything I've missed, anything, you know, anything screamingly obvious. And she said, no, why don't I just guess what's on your list? And then she did guess. She got 5 out of the 8 straight away.
That's not bad.
And then the other 3, I went, oh, yeah, I should have that. And instead,
she persuaded. Just reminded you of things you'd forgotten.
So this will feature that band I'm always on about. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, that one. Yeah, you know.
All the hits.
And obviously the Beatles. So, you know, this is how it was chosen.
And presumably songs that you sing along to in the shower, then.
All songs I can sing along to in the shower, yes.
So where are you starting us off?
I'll start with my first one is Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond.
Hey.
Because I grew up in the 1970s. Mm. If you grew up in the 1970s, if you had a mother in the 1970s, this is the song that soundtracks it. I think everybody's mum, when I was growing up, everybody's mum loved Neil Diamond. Mm. And so this, just anytime I hear this, I can smell the back seat of my mum's Mini. As everybody's mum had a Mini in the 1970s as well. So yeah, I love this song.
So that was pre-taped. She was relying on that coming on the radio.
Oh no, I don't know. She must have had a tape, mustn't she?
Well.
Or maybe she's just singing it.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it always seems to be like, yeah, well, it was this and Seasons in the Sun was another one that was always on the radio. But yeah, Sweet Caroline is it's a through line through my life via my mother. But you know, it was my mum likes Smokey Robinson. That's who my mother likes. Yeah. So she's got she had a very meagre collection of vinyl records.
Yeah.
But they were excellent vinyl records that my mother had. Yeah. My stepdad liked the Moody Blues, so he's the vinyl collection. Don't listen to this, Chris, but his vinyl was terrible. But my mum had a lot of soul music. Because I come from Peterborough, and you know, it was a hotbed of Northern Soul, weirdly, in Peterborough. So yeah.
Yeah. Very strangely.
Great,
let's have a start with Neil Diamond.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hand, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
So, Peterborough, 1970s.
Yeah.
What did we find you doing? What kind of lad were you?
A small, round, shy boy. Yes. Grumpy. Well, at the moment, I've got a nephew. My nephew Noah is basically me. He lives in Australia. And every time they go, oh, God, he's just sitting in the other room reading his comics. It's all so, yeah, they keep trying to persuade him not to be. And I keep thinking, like, why are you trying to cure him of being me? That would be lovely. What a wonderful thing that would be to grow up as. But, yes, that's what I was like. Yeah. A small boy sitting in his own reading a comic. Of course, now.
Yeah, of course.
Now I'm much bigger.
Still a comic fan?
Still a comic fan, yes. Well, I'm starting a PhD in a couple of months' time on Marvel Comics.
Oh, really?
So, yes, in 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 years, hopefully, all being well, be a Doctor of Marvel.
What do you hope to get out of that?
An excuse to read lots of Marvel comics.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly why. Well, no, that's not true. Of course, that's silly. Now, the other thing I want to get out of it is to say Dr. Hibbert, actually.
Yes.
That's basically, those are the two things.
Surely worth the best part of a decade.
And several thousand pounds. Yes.
But, I mean, what will it say at the top? I hope you've got some sort of...
Oh, the thesis, yes. The thesis is Marvel Team-Up, colon.
Mm.
The Bronze Age of Marvel Comics as a model for transmedia collaboration.
Well, I mean, that's going to take you 7 years.
Sounds pretty good, isn't it? Sounds pretty good.
So what's your second choice?
Second choice is The Magical Mystery Tour by The Beatles.
Mm.
Not my favourite Beatles song, not anybody's favourite Beatles song. You'd have to be mad to have this as your favourite Beatles song. I bloody love The Beatles, that's my favourite. I've recently started listening to Beatles in mono.
Oh, really?
And, you know, after all these years of people saying it was better, when you listen to it, you'd like go... Oh Christ, it really is.
And really?
It's amazingly better. It's just a different. It's like listening to Sgt. Pepper. For my whole life, I thought, well, Sgt. Pepper's all right. I don't see what people go on about it for. But then you listen to it in mono, and it's like, holy wow. It's incredible. But I chose Magical Mystery Tour because I the film Magical Mystery Tour, again, not a film I'd watch often. But what I really love about that film, what I love about The Beatles, is because so it's 1967, 1968. All the pop stars are on drugs. They're discovering the secrets of the universe.
Mm.
There's people like the Doors or whatever are swanning around going, oh, we're massive rock stars, we're really important, we're like gods to you. And the Beatles go, well, we found the answer to the universe. A, we're going to share it with you. I'm going to do it by getting on a bus with some pensioners. And it's like, that's what I love about the Beatles, because the Beatles didn't go, we know the answer to life and we might tell you. The Beatles go, everybody can join in. This is for everybody.
Yeah.
And they say in the Magical Mystery Tour, it's just such a nut. Like, but you're the biggest band in the whole world ever. You could do anything you like. And basically what you've done is you're having packed lunches for a week. Titting around with crates of beer and old people, and I just think that's so wonderful. So I just think for basically gods to do that, it's impossible to try and imagine.
Brilliant. Well, let's go on our own Magical Mystery Tour then.
That was a slick link. I like
that. Always so slick.
Yeah.
So, Mark, we haven't properly introduced you. One, you're a fantastic musician. And two, you've got a new album out.
Ooh, you're really excited. I've got a new album. I'm really excited about it, yeah. Got an album. It's called Still Valid. The whole idea of it was, for years and years and years, and all the decades I've been doing this, me and my band have always said, what we should do? Do a half-hour-long album. Mm. 10 songs, half an hour. It's like a shame about Ray.
Yeah.
Go in, do them. Jobs are easy, and we've always ended up doing like a science fiction rock opera about space dinosaurs. Or something, which, you know, that's what our last album was. Like, yeah. Which took years and years, and especially after the last one, which took so long to do. We said, look, we're just simple songs. You know, you say, the last album took 3 years. Come on. So that's what we did, weren't it? And it took 4 years somehow to do that. And it's like, and I kept saying to it all the way through, I'm like, it's not going to be a concept album. It's not going to be a concept album. And I finish it and I go, this appears to be a concept album. It's not advertising. I'm not advertising it as such.
Mm.
And I'm not saying it is like September of My Years by Frank Sinatra. But it's basically like September of My Years by Frank Sinatra, but from an English person's point of view. So, yeah, so all the songs are about... being a grown adult of years old in the current club.
No, but and that's what makes them fantastic. I mean, did you have to? I suppose you, by the sounds of it, you composed them over the years. But did you have to think about what your place was in the music scene or your friend? It's a lot about friendship in there, and the friendships that you make through music.
Well, there is. You sort of do this sort of stuff, and well, it's. Things happen. I think things happen. You know, when you're a teenager, most things happen is like you're trying to get off with girls.
Yeah.
And so that's what people write songs about.
Yeah.
And then I think you get older, you go, then a lot of miracles have been things I've talked to in pubs to people.
Yeah.
And now I don't go to the pub as much anymore because, you know, I've got a nice flat and a nice missus, and you sort of think, well, I'll just stay here.
Yeah.
So now it's like, well, it's things I think about in the shower or talk about to her.
Yeah.
Or talk to the few friends I have left on the email and stuff. So, yeah, so it is, every now and again, some of the songs, it'll be me going, oh, hang on a minute, rather than just, like, thinking about that in the shower to myself.
Yeah.
I could write a song about that.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the songs, I've been doing sort of rock operas.
Yeah.
My friend Steve for the past 8 years. So some of them are songs I've written for that, and then there's one that, then others are written for, one was written for a football compilation, one was written for a theme tune to a podcast and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've sort of gently come about over the years that way.
How does one approach writing a rock opera?
Carefully. Very, very carefully, young man. That speaks one who knows. I don't know. I really don't know. I think they just sort of happen. One of the things I've been doing for the past few years, I did their main screenwriting.
Mm.
So the last but one rock opera I wrote was all written with the three-act structure and subtext. And you know, character arcs and all this sort of thing. By the time we did it, and it's done by me and my friend Steve and some wigs.
Mm.
So there was about 14 characters in it and stuff. But by the time we actually performed it, nobody knew what the heck was going on. Yeah, I'm thinking about rewriting as a film with actually enough people in to do it. But no. So then the next one I wrote, I didn't do any of that. I just sort of thought, here are some songs. What's the sort of thing I'd like to do? And there's one story. There's about five characters. So it's adaptable. But the weird thing is. I wrote the fifth one, Hey A16K, and then we performed it around the country for about a year. Then I went to see a pantomime, and it turns out what I'd written was a pantomime. Oh, yes, it was.
It's behind you.
Yes, it is now.
It's all behind you, don't worry. So what's your next choice?
My next choice is Don't Come the Cowboy With Me, Sonny Jim by Kirsty MacColl. Because I love Kirsty MacColl. I sort of think... I honestly think if the only way the Smiths would have been better if they were Kirsty MacColl up front rather than Morrissey. Much like the Morrissey, obviously it's a matter of my age. But yeah, I've tried to put this out chronologically, really. I do remember working in a kettle factory when I was 19, between summer holidays and Polly, and being introduced to Kirsty MacColl. I think I'd heard one of her songs in Sir Martin's Rapids in Leicester, but then got the tape, and I just love Kirsty MacColl. I think she's got such a turn of phrase that I love. And the things she talks about and the way she talks about them. I mean, she's a brilliant singer.
Yeah.
And the way she arranges the vocals, it's one of those things that is a complete mystery to me that I'd never be able to do. But, yeah, everything about her, the phrasing, the vocabulary she has, the way she puts it together, the sort of heart that she's got, because all of her songs are like, I think Kirsten Cole would be, I think a lot of people would think this, but you think, well, Kirsten Cole would obviously be a great friend to have because she'd be fun,
yeah, can you imagine?
And strong and care, really. I just thought, yeah, she might not have been, I don't know, but I mean, that's how it feels when you listen, and that's what it comes through on the songs. And I chose this particular song because it just seemed the most Kirsten McCullish. I mean, the one I think of is Days, because, you know, to be honest, but that's, she didn't write that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and this is on Kite, which again is just one of the best albums ever made by anybody existed.
Let's have a listen.
Some boys with warm beds and cold, cold hearts can make you feel nothing at all. They'll never remember and they'll never mind if you're counting the cracks in the wall. They're quick and they're greedy, they never feel guilty. They don't know the meaning of hurt. The boots just go back on the socks that had stayed on. The next time they see you, they treat you like dirt. The next time they treat you like dirt. Now don't come the cowboy with me, Sonny Jim. I know lots of those and you're not one of them. There's a light in your eyes tells me somebody's in and you won't come the cowboy with me.
So Mark, another thing on your fantastic music is that it's got this just wonderful light touch and your turn of phrase is always magnificent. How do you find playing it live when you're do you always often you put on your own gigs or work on the bills, do you deliberately structure it with people whose tone will fit with yours, or do you do anything to make sure it doesn't jar when you come on, you're like, hey, look, I've got these fun songs about football or being in a band or touring around the country and that kind of thing?
No.
Oh, great. Well, no, it's good too.
No, yeah. I don't. I feel quite strongly about it, actually, because throughout my career in rock, I started off doing the gigs. I remember the first gigs I used to do in London was coming down and playing the Bull and Gate, as was. And then you'd just be stuck on a bill with whatever bands had applied to play, and they thought, and had said they'd bring a coach laid down with it.
Yeah.
And I like those gigs. Yeah. Because it's a challenge. Because I enjoy. Because whenever I play, because not many people like me, but the, whenever I play, it's like there's not my audience. I very rarely have an audience of my own to play to.
Yeah.
And I like that because it's a challenge to persuade other people's fans to like you, especially other people's fans' girlfriends. I love getting them to like me because other people's fans hate that. When
why do they? Are they crossed arms normally?
Oh yeah, the boyfriends. No, it's because the boyfriends, especially if it's old girlfriends of the bands, they're the best people to make like. That's fantastic. But once fans you don't know.
Yeah.
I find it more fun because it's challenging, because you have to work to get those people to like you and persuade them that. And I think that's really the way I write songs has been formed by writing a song that I know I can get across to an audience of people I haven't come to see me.
Yeah,
and I think that's a really good thing to do, because then I think the temptation is after a couple of years of doing gigs, then you can go and play properly thought out bills with people who are like you, which is nice, which is really good fun, but then I think you sort of stop developing in the same way. And you can sort of pander to that audience.
Yes.
I mean, I'm on like my fifth iteration of the indie scene, I think I'm on now.
Yeah.
And every time it happens, you see these great bands turn up. Yes, so the original example was Airport Girl, if you remember them. I loved Airport Girl, great band, played loads of gigs with them.
Yeah.
Then they got into the scene, played gigs to people like them already.
Yeah.
And then they did a country music. And it was, in the nice spot, they're nice people. It's awful. You know, you're like, what are you doing that for? And I think that's what can happen. If you just play to people who already like you, or who are likely to like you, you'll do songs that they want to hear.
Yes.
Because it's like, well, this is what I write anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, all my songs sound the same and always have done from the beginning. It must be because I was doing the right thing. I think if you do, so when I do my Totally Acoustic gigs,
so that's your podcast that you record here in London, and you have the pleasure of hosting other people and playing.
Yeah, yourself. Yeah. I mean, I do not put any thought into it at all about having people come back. Sometimes it does happen that way, but I like it better when it's people who have never met, have never played before. I had Simon Love playing with Key Top Hops, is also indie celebrity, his band, and it was brilliant because I didn't really play before, but it's all like, this really works. This is people anything, and I think there's so many, like, especially with indie music, especially nowadays, everybody can be connected on the internet like that.
Yeah,
it forms tiny ghettos of groups of people who will play together.
Absolutely.
I think sometimes if you just slam them together, It doesn't, I mean, it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
But then you think, well, something new comes out of this and people meet other people and you hear new stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's no.
that's a very good no. and the brilliant thing about Totally Acoustic is also that you get the audience to sing the theme tune, which I think is a masterstroke. So what's your next choice?
My next choice is Waiting for the Great Leap Forward by Billy Bragg.
Mm.
An easy leap from Kevin Nicole,
yeah,
obviously. But yeah, I love Billy Bragg. As anybody who's ever heard any of my songs can clearly tell.
There's a definite line through there.
Really? Sure not.
That's a compliment.
When I first started doing gigs, mate, I was putting records up. My dad will often ring me and say, "I've heard you on the radio." Yeah, it's Billy Bragg, Dad. but yeah, you know, I love Billy Bragg. I mean, like many people love Billy Bragg. I always think of Billy Bragg. I used to be quite cocky about it. The thing about Billy Bragg is he's never gone rubbish, has he? Billy Bragg's on. And then he really did go. And then the Wilco stuff, and then the... And I think it's sad with Billy Bragg now. I think a lot of people, I love Billy Bragg. You see him, he's still brilliant. But the songs he writes seem to like capitulated to WOMAD.
Yeah.
Really. He's like, oh, I think I'm going to write a song about this. And I think, like, well, you're not writing a song, I don't know. But I'm not so keen on it. It's early stuff. And I think Waiting for the Great Before is just the most, it's political, it's personal, it's got jokes in it, it's exciting, you can sing it very, very loudly, along with it. It's just basically the perfect Billy Bragg.
Yeah.
In the cheese pavilion, the only noise I hear is the sound of someone stacking chairs and mopping up spilled beer, and someone asking questions and basking in the light of the 15 fame-filled minutes of the fanzine writer. Mixing pop and politics, he asks me what the use is. I offer him embarrassment and my usual excuses, while looking down the corridor out to where the van is waiting. I'm looking for the Great Leap Forward.
I have to ask you about another thing dear to your heart. It's Peterborough United, London Road. Tell me about your memories and how you feel, your relationship with that club.
My relationship with people is the same. It's always strange when you see people talking about their team, and they always say the same thing. So it's, you know, it goes, "Oh, we don't make it easy."
No.
We don't make it easy. Well, yeah, nobody seems to make it easy. You know, it's like, you know, oh, we've.
They put us through the ringer.
It's always the way. It's never boring, is it? It's what it is for other people. But no, Posh, there's a song on the new album about called in the North, which is about this.
Yeah.
And in my entry into going to see my local team was that my granddad used to take me. It turns out I realised, like, about 20 years after he died, I thought, hang on a minute, there was a reason he was doing that. Well, because, you know, my parents got divorced when I was six, seven, and that's my granddad. And I didn't realise, I never put two and two together, that's when my granddad started taking me to the football. So going, I see. Again, this is one of the things I think I go all the time. My missus will tell you I go like twice a year. But now I go, and it's like, it's much more fun than going when I was 10 or whatever, because, you know, it's shorter now. When I was 10, the matches went off about weeks.
And now that's so true.
It's half time already. How did that happen? What's going on? But it's lovely, and it's one of the, you know, my old mate from school, who I usually go with, he was saying, "What do you get a season ticket this year? You know, get you out from under a fee, won't it?" And I came home and said, "Yeah." He said, "I should get a season ticket." And my missus going, "That's a good idea. Get you out of the house."
Like, oh, actually, it works.
Yeah, and I used to think, "Oh, that's," and you know, it's one of these things. You're like, "Oh, I see again." That's why football works. It is my team, and
I mean, you're encapsulating that song. It's about far more than what happens on the pitch.
Oh, God, yes. You know, Jesus, yes, yeah.
As Sheffield Wednesday put me through the ringer.
Yes.
Yes. For a long time.
I did see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. And I think, you know, when you support proper team,
that's what
it's like. And that's why, you know, I always think, I seem to tell you about Arsenal fans trying to get Arsenal Wenger. But Manchester United, you think, like, what?
Yeah.
You've just won that, and now you get what? And you think you're just idiots. And you force yourself, I think, supporting teams like that, because you think, well, you don't get the enjoyment.
No. And also, to all your mates, you are that club, and they associate that with you,
whereas exactly.
you can never claim that kind of part of
exactly.
it. What's your next choice?
Next choice, now, this is definitely one, when I was going to the list with Mother after, I should, oh, that lot. I chose a String Bean Jean by Ben and Sebastian.
Aha.
Because Belle and Sebastian were one of the two bands that really changed my entire life. Changed my life, this band.
Yeah.
I went to see them around the time that their second album, If You're Feeling Sinister, came out. One of my friends, when I was living in Leicester, said, oh, do you want to, we're going to go to Glasgow to go and see, oh, I can't remember the name, some other band.
Yeah.
They're supporting this band called Belle and Sebastian. I thought, oh, we heard one of their songs on Mark Radcliffe, all right, we'll go.
Yeah.
And we went, and they were astounding. They were playing at the QMU, I think 1997, I think it was. They were playing at the QMU.
Yeah.
And they were just the best. It was the best QMU I've ever been to. Like, every, and this is all songs I've ever heard. And it,
yeah.
Just, to be fair, I had been drinking in Glasgow since about 1 o'clock that afternoon.
They don't serve it weak up there.
But no, they don't. But it was one of these things where, like, I got separated from my friends. And, like, halfway through the gig, they were doing a cover version of Reel Around the Fountain. And I just listened. I was going to be like, I don't know you, but I've got to tell somebody. This is amazing. And all these people around me kept going, oh, we know. And then I sort of followed them around the country for a couple of years, and they were dreadful live after that. Absolutely dreadful live after that. But they really were. And that, this, I think all of us who went to see Ben and Sebastian then sort of came back to Leicester and either formed a band and or formed a record label. And suddenly we were all putting on gigs and doing stuff. And I think that happened a lot.
Yeah.
I think Ben and Sebastian, one of these bands who do not get the credit, they were sort of ahead of their time in terms of internet fandom.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they had Tiger Mill was on tape and stuff. And they were one of the first bands to get that sort of internet fandom.
Yeah.
But I think because The Enemy and The Melody Maker hated them because of that, because
they
it was like, oh, this is happening without our permission.
Yeah.
So we're mocked and mocked and have never got the credit they deserve. But, you know, Ben and Sebastian changed a lot of, my friends that I still have now, people I met through that era of going to gigs and being on the email. My band was formed because I think most of my band members wouldn't agree with that, but it was formed because of Ben and Sebastian. and this is one of the songs from this is one of the B sides in their first three EPs. The best bits. The best bits. And I love that. I learnt this song when I used to do it.
Did you?
Yeah, and the words are great.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant song. I love it.
So one of the things most synonymous with you is that you like to write some things in capital letters.
Yes.
So I'd like to ask you for your highlights, if that sounds like it.
Sounds like it. So great moments.
Yeah, great.
Well, the one that immediately springs to mind is playing in the merchandising tent at Indie Tracks.
Great festival.
3 years ago. Yeah, lovely festival. A festival I love to play, and then it's always really difficult because we always apply.
Yeah.
And then we never hear from them. So I'm still waiting to hear if they're playing this year. I think possibly not at the moment. But as I say, I said earlier that I've never really wanted to be part of the scene. I've never really been in a scene. But then, I mean, I know everybody says that, don't they? Everybody will land on said they were in the romance scene. But I've never thought this is my scene, here I am. The people I think of as my scene are all sorts of different people dotted around and different things. But when we did Indie Tracks, we played Indie Tracks every year for the first 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And then I just sort of really thought, this is it. This is where I belong. These are my people. Here I am. This is happening. And then we didn't play for ages, and it was sort of really upsetting, really. I was sort of going, don't you want me anymore? I got properly really upset about it. Sad about it, really. And then during that time, I went to the festival, and John Jervis, who does the merchandising tent and is the loveliest man in music officially, said, "Oh, do you want to come and do a spot in the merch tent?" I thought, "Oh, okay, I'll do that."
Yeah.
And I remember I turned up at the merchandising tent, and I was really something like, oh. So that was a big side that I just did all your wife. And I just thinking, oh, I hope this is going to be all right. I hope somebody's going to listen to me doing it. And I got there, and it was packed. The merchandise tent was packed. And I thought, oh, God, what's happening? I thought, there's so many people here. Everybody's going to be... Something's happening. Yeah. People are, like, looking at all these... I was just there outside the tent, and I thought, I can't get in.
You can't get into your own gig.
And then I thought, oh, no. Because, you know, in that tent, it's like there's all these stalls there. So people, somebody's selling something cheap, or something's happening.
Yeah.
So there's, I'm going to be sat in the corner like a twat, trying to shout over the noise of all these people, whatever they're doing. I thought, oh God, I felt bad about it. So it's going to be awful. So I was trying to get in. I said, oh, excuse me, it's busy here, isn't it? And this bloke turned around to me, he's like, yeah. MJ Hibbitt's playing. And I just went, it was just like choir of angels singing. So I went, oh my word.
Brilliant.
They do like me after all. And it was just the best thing that had ever happened. It was just, I thought, really? And I was so happy and so surprised.
Mm.
And yeah, so that was. And then I did the gig, and unfortunately, I was drunk. I was playing Frankie Machine for my band. I was playing his guitar, which he'd done a weird tuning on, which I didn't realise all the way through. But it was fine. But that I think I would say that is definitely the highlight.
I suppose that shows the vulnerability of fronting your own band, because you often play solo as well as with the band as well, don't you?
Yeah.
So you take the highs and the lows yourself.
But that was one. And then with the band, I guess the high point would be we did a Radio 1 session.
Mm.
To be fair, we did it as Steve Lamacq's revenge against Radio 1 for sacking him, basically. He went, oh yeah, Mark. Might as well do it now, hadn't I? Lovely man.
So you were his sort of guilty pleasure to bring on to the...
His vengeance, yes, yeah. Yes. definitely, yes. So, but that was amazing. You know, we went to Maida Vale.
Yeah.
So whenever that's on television, I always go, oh, I've been there.
great.
And we did three songs live on Radio 1. It was incredible.
What's your next choice?
My next choice is the other band that changed my life. This is Tallulah by Hello Darling. And especially this song, because this is a song about wondering if you've heard all the great things, and it's a song that answers itself, because the song is saying, like, have I met all the people that mean something to me? Have I heard all the music that means something to me? And the answer is brilliantly, with us going, well, no, because there's this song now. It's a brilliant song. I mean, I think Elizabeth is amazing.
Yeah.
And again, she's somebody who has... the way she writes, I do notice nowadays when you listen to her songs, it would almost always starts with her like doing sort of a screenplay, a dusty road. So it always starts like that. But I think she's got a really interesting way of writing songs, and the things she talks about, it feels really honest.
Yeah.
But then it sounds great, and then the band are bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
I think you cannot underestimate the joy of having a brilliant band in indie pop music. Because I think the other band around this time that could have been was Standard Fare.
Mm.
Very similar. Another great band with a really distinctive singing. Brilliant songs. When the two of them came around, it was like, God, there's two really good bands. And this is unheard of. I loved it. And Hello Darling just really mean a lot to me, because when their first album came out, at the time with Sound Effects, I was like, yeah, this still works. This is something that's still valid.
Great band.
Yeah, amazing band. And then every time you hear them, because I mean, I don't really know them very well at all, but then every time you're in Pret a Manger and they come on, you're like, whoa.
My avocado sarnies.
Exactly, I'm always looking at Mark, do not tell people you know them. The people in Pret a Manger don't care. You don't know them very well. Come on, it's been like you just like glow with pride that that's happened.
On the drive from St. Lucia to Surfers, in my old university car. We had the windows down for our aircon. The door was so hot that you burned your arm. It was the tail end of a summer, and the heat washed in with the breeze. and you were searching for something to sing to as the radio played another terrible song. But lucky for me, you found a tape with Tallulah on, and it's been a long time since I've seen all my old friends, but I really love my new friends. I feel I've known them a long while.
So Mark, tell me, away from music,
yep,
what does your life hold, and how do you juggle that with your considerable music commitments as well? I know that's obviously been a recurring theme as you've been trying to put this album out.
Yes.
It's a lot to juggle, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, my day job, I'm a fucking computer database manager, which is thrilling, as you can imagine.
But is it, you know, for you, is it... Really? Do you get in about of it that?
Well, yeah. This is true. I always say it's not very interesting, but then I'm now, for the first time in donkey's years, I'm sharing an office with somebody who does a similar thing to me. We had a 2-hour discussion about SQL queries, and I was trying to go home, but I kept thinking, oh, he just said something really interesting again. Oh, I'm going to have to come back to this. Oh, well, you say that, it's one of those things. Computers is. Something that people of my generation sort of fell into it because it didn't exist before, so you weren't trained for it.
Yeah.
And you do, you think, yeah, it's the worst ways to make a living. But then as well as that, I'm doing, you know, I've been doing these rock operas for Steve for ages, and I did an MA a few years ago in creative writing, so I've got home, and you know, I've got family. Stuff, and you sort of think, yeah, you've got to try and find time to do chums as well and this sort of thing.
Yeah,
yeah, it's busy, but I have lists. I have lots of lists.
So that's how you manage it, is it?
It is. If you want to know what I'm doing August 13th, I've got a memory stick in my bag. I can get out my big list and can tell you 8 different tasks I've got that day. So if all else fails, one day I'll write myself a personal management book.
Yes.
And say how to do all this at the same time as each other.
With the link to the right spreadsheet.
Oh, yes.
Oh, fantastic. And what's your next choice, your penultimate?
Penultimate choice is In Another Lifetime by Gavin Osborne.
Hey.
Which stands in for, because Gav, it would be this one, but I mean, it could be Chris T.T. as well, Chris T. or Grace Peachy song. Yeah, there's a few people around who I think of as my peers.
Mm.
They probably would, but you know, I still think, oh, these are my chums, yeah. These are people doing similar thing. And I chose this one because me and Gav, we've done a couple of tours. It seems to get on quite well, you know, it's a similar sort of thing. And he does make me laugh. Yeah, we always have a lovely time. And I just picked this one because it's a beautiful song. I think it's one of these songs that you only write if you're a middle-aged person doing music. And that's something I don't think it feels like it should be a dirty word, because you think, oh, pop music, that's the kids. And that's what, I think it's a wonderful thing that over the past 10 or 20 years, it's like doing this level of this sort of music has become something that people my age can do.
Yeah.
And use to say things with. Because, you know, you thought that we can get by. You don't have to be on the radio all the time. You can do this. And I think this is a great song that Gav wrote about... from his point of view as a parent, how weird it is to think that his kids will have no idea of what his life was before they existed.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that's really, because I was thinking, well, you know, my parents, my grandparents were human beings like me.
Yeah.
And then I turned up, and then obviously nothing interesting happened after that, because they didn't need to. Their lives had peaked. And so this is a song about trying to explain, or not wanting to explain, those stories to his kids. So I find it interesting because I haven't got kids, so it's like thinking like, all right, so I still remember it the other way around. And it's a really beautiful song about something I don't think anybody else expressed, which to me says me and Gavin are trained somewhere drunk at 3 in the afternoon giggling about something, and by extension me and Chris, or me and the band, or you know, me and basically the friends I have in rock who are, you know, some of my best friends, talking about having fun.
And do you have a a grand plan of what you want to achieve with music, or is it just literally, you know, I'll take each album or each gig as it comes and enjoy it for what it is?
Enjoy it for what it is and not for what it isn't.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is it now. I mean, with all
and you've invented your own dance, you know,
it's all there. Yeah. Where now? No, I don't really, to be honest. We used to have all these hopes and dreams and stuff. And now, like, so I'm doing screenwriting, but that's why I've diverted my ultimate disappointment to now. But with music, you sort of think, well, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. Mm. I know something will happen.
Mm.
We watched a brilliant thing at Paul McCartney being interviewed, and he was talking about the Beatles used to say, something will happen. And yeah, we were watching, like, that's so true. And you sort of think, well, that's how I've always thought. But when we're doing this album, I did think, like, well, I don't know what's going to happen, but something will happen. There'll be some, everything we've ever done, there's been some stupid adventure that's come out of it. So I think, well, something will come up.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. And I think with this now, I think, well, I no longer think we're going to be on the Brits or in a Mercury, you know.
Mm.
But we'll just have fun. And it's lovely because, you know, the Validators are someone, they won't listen to this, they don't care. They're some of my best friends. I love them. I really genuinely love them. They love me as well. So, you know, I don't mind it. You know, it's. If something happened, if we all had our limbs amputated, we get people, somebody could wheel us to a curry house and have a curry. we had a band Curry the other one, a couple of months ago. And I was just sitting there like, well, as you always say whenever we have a band Curry, I always say, oh, it's so much nicer than doing a gig, isn't it? It's so much easier. And then Tim always gets really upset. He said, whoa, we're not spitting the band. No, we're not spitting the band. We're just having more curries. Stop crying, Tim.
I'm sure you could have one afterwards.
Before you were born, I played accordion on a roundabout in East Dulwich and made 47 pence. Your mum fell asleep on the 176 night bus and ended up in a depot in Penge. I pretended to be a fireman come to fix a fridge in Malta. Your mum had a birthday party that was so much hotter than the sun, and everyone began to boil because she covered the house in kitchen foil. For my birthday, she made me a treasure hunt, starting in bed and spreading all over London. Then one night I got drunk and threw prawns behind my dad's fridge, then forgot and went to Poland for a month. In another lifetime, in another lifetime, in another lifetime, in another life, in another lifetime, another lifetime, in another lifetime, in another lifetime.
So what, I've very cruelly cast you into the desert after a freak hang gliding accident. How do you think you'd cope in those circumstances? You haven't been maimed or anything, you know.
No, I'm just poorly.
Yeah, you're just alone.
No, well, that's how I cope.
Poorly.
I would be poorly.
Yeah.
I very much. Well, you know, everything I do is based in the modern world. You know, I work with computers.
Yeah.
I basically live on the internet. I'm vegetarian, but a lazy vegetarian. So, you know, I want products that I can stick in the oven. I don't cook anything. You know, I'm not going to hunt and kill anything unless, you know, unless there's some tofu wandering the desert.
Yeah.
I'd like a pint at some point. You know, it's not really going to work. I am not Bear Grylls.
Oh, I'm feeling really guilty now. But I will give you the complete Red Dwarf box set and the Tiger Who Came to Tea. You're very generous. Anything else that you would like?
Yeah, as a luxury item, I'd like some nail clippers.
Oh, really?
I've really thought a lot about this.
Wow.
I've had a really serious think about it. And I do have a message in the shower, obviously. I'm 45, I'm nearly 46 years old. And it is true, whatever he says happens to you when you get to my age. It's like, well, I always thought, you know, your hairline comes from your maternal grandfather.
Yes.
So I always thought I'll be all right. Because I remember he's the one who took me to see football. So, well, he kept his hair.
Yeah.
My grandma kept his. Unfortunately, he kept up his nose. Mostly. So, you know, my life is a constant battle with, like, combing, if you can hear that on the, that's me combing hair over places where it's missing, cutting it off every bloody where else. You know, I want to get Whitlows on my fingers like an old lady or something. So I thought, yeah, if I had a pair of nail scissors, I can at least not die of a hangnail.
Yeah.
I'll be able to breathe.
Yeah.
I'll be able, and, you know, who knows? If I find that tofu tree, I could snip some tofu off me. That's
very inventive. I like it. I like it very much. And your final choice?
My final choice. is one of my songs. I wouldn't be myself in it. So one of, and I've chosen for the Fate of the Earth from the album Dinosaur Planet, because so Dinosaur Planet, I'll explain this, because no bugger balls it. Dinosaur Planet is a rock opera about space dinosaurs. It was a show I did in Edinburgh, and then we did, and it took years and years and years and years and years to make, because when we did it, I thought, I want to do this properly.
Yeah.
I'm probably only ever going to do a full cast science fiction rock opera once in my life.
Yeah.
And having done it, I'm bloody never doing it again. It will only be one time. So I thought, well, we're going to do it properly. So it's got about 20 different people on it. It's got dialogue in between the songs, it's got sound effects, it's got bloody orchestras and everything. It took ages to do, but I think the song for The Fate of the Earth is like 7 minutes long, and it kind of distills everything that I love about it in it, because it's got loads of my friends, loads and loads of my friends that are on it,
yeah.
And especially on this particular song. We recorded the bass track in one take. It was bizarre that we did it, and then it's got tons of, it's got Tom from the band, it's just got him playing an orchestra,
yeah,
and it's got loads of sound effects, it's got a million guitars, it's madness, the whole thing's madness. But I actually listen to this song quietly on my own with my eyes closed,
and yeah,
how we did that,
yeah,
we actually managed this happened. So yeah, I picked this because this basically reminds me of everything I've done in the crazy world of rock and roll.
Plenty to dissect.
Yeah.
I can think of no better place to leave it than Mark. Thank you so much for
thanks for having me. That was lovely.
Coming on the podcast. Where can people find you online?
MJHibbett.com. MJHIBBET.
Perfect. Very easy to find them. That's great. Can't wait to listen to the final tune and be able to enjoy this podcast.
A giant robot the size of a former Polytechnics engineering building drop kicks an armored tyrannosaur across the rooftops of a burning city, his machine gun spattering the night sky, bellowing as he flies. Then the steel behemoth itself comes under attack from a combined fleet of enhanced pterodactyls and human jet fighters, screeching missile after missile into its iron hide as it slowly falls to the street below, where it narrowly misses a speeding car, driven by Terry with his granddad in the passenger seat, clutching a paper in one hand, a phone in the other, and between them, the answer.
Iridium! Iridium! That's how you get rid of them, that rare precious metal that defines the KT boundary, which we thought was the meteorite that wiped the dinosaurs out. But no! This literature search shows it was the failed final defense of the first dinosaurs. They ignited volcanoes to try and send out a blast of death to robots. Iridium is death! Death to robots!
But then his phone reception is gone as they crash into an iguanodon. Gone mad with battle, who says?
Prepare to be
food. They try to turn. Trapped by another giant robot, they're under attack from both sides now. Surely this must be their doom.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.